welcome to We Got This Covered's Cinemaholics, the weekly movie review talk show where John Negroni and Will Ashton discuss the biggest and best films coming to theaters. So sit back, relax, and pour one out for the two and only Cinemaholics.
Hello, cinema friends. Welcome to another episode of We Got This Covered's Cinemaholics, the official We Got This Covered podcast, where we review movies every week, do some movie news, and this week we have a big question on our minds, something that we can't seem to get away from. It's been one of those weeks, but we want to know, who are Rey's parents in Star Wars The Force Awakens? Now, to help me answer that question and do the rest of the show, unfortunately, I do have to point out Will Ashton from the Internet, Pennsylvania, could not make it. He's out of town this weekend. I know he has a life unlike us, but that's good for him. Not amazing for you, but we're just gonna power through it. But helping me out, I think you can already, if you're watching us on YouTube, you can see his face already. We, of course, have Soundmaster Maverick Hines from the Dial of Dungeon.
Hello. It is good to be, you know, let out of the dungeon on my weekly walk. Mm-hmm. It's good to get some cardio, drink some water.
Yeah.
The air's fresh up here. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
It's a nice place to be at when talking about movies around food.
Absolutely.
Right? We watch movies around food, so. Oh, man. So like I said, we have a bunch of stuff to talk about. We're going to be reviewing The Lost City of Zed, or Z, depends on how you pronounce it, the country you're in. And that's going to be a fun talk, I think. And we're going to... we're going to start off with a couple of movie news before we get into our main segment. And, last week, we talked about The Fate of the Furious, mm-hmm. right? So Maverick, myself, Will Ashton, we talked about The Fate of the Furious. I feel like that was a good time at the movies. I think we all were kind of like feeling pretty good about it. Now, Maverick, you know, how would you feel about another Fate of the Furious movie, but this time with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham by themselves?
I think I'd be okay if there was never another movie with Furious or Fast in the title.
Well, let's say it's a spinoff, and so it's in that same universe, but it's just these two characters. Are you saying that you just don't even care? You wouldn't even want to see?
I mean, I'm down for some Dwayne The Rock Johnson action, always.
Of course, yeah.
You know, but again, anything Fast and the Furious, I'm just like, yes, have fun. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah, without going on a tangent, I was really looking forward to Dwayne Johnson possibly being the genie in the new live-action Aladdin movie. I feel like that would be such a great casting decision. But it looks like Will Smith is going to be the genie.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. And the movie's by Guy Ritchie, which I can't wait to see King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. I'm really curious about that
previews one. Previews are
great. Do you think Guy Ritchie can do an Aladdin movie? Do you think that's...
I mean, I don't know.
It's just such a weird... It's not the first director I think of for Disney, but I mean, that's how I felt too with Jon Favreau doing Jungle Book seemed weird. And that was awesome. So anyway, Fast and the Furious, as I was alluding to earlier, is getting a spinoff. And it's going to be just about Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham. Yeah, I can't say
Jason
that.
Statham.
Jason Statham. You know Jason Statham. I feel like we talked about this in our review. We were like, man, I just wish...
Yeah, you had mentioned that you'd wanted a spinoff.
I think Will was for it, and I don't think we were alone, and clearly we weren't, because it looks like the studio's into this. So on WeGotThisCover.com, you guys can check out the full story. Michael Breyers wrote up the whole thing, and so Deadline actually first pushed this out, and it looks like Chris Morgan, who he's considered the franchise architect.
Okay. Architect.
I just keep putting like extra letters into words.
Yeah, you're just going for it. Creative freedom on here.
But no, they're talking. He was basically talking Luke Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson's character, mm-hmm. could form an unlikely alliance with Jason Statham's Deckard Shaw, and it would be built upon the foundations laid down in Fate of the Furious. And so Dwayne Johnson and Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson as Hobbs and Shaw would basically be doing their own thing. And like, it makes sense because they were both antagonists, mm-hmm. you know, in the previous movies. And then they like slowly became like sympathizers.
Okay.
I mean, so I think it makes sense that they would kind of break away and like you have Dom over here with his family.
Yeah. I mean, if there was going to be a spinoff for the series, I would rather
those are the two.
Those two versus Dom and Ludacris. Like, you know what I mean?
So I love Ludacris and he's great. I just, you know, and Tyrese Gibson was pretty funny for a while there. But anyway, so that's Fate of the Furious. You guys can check out that link in our cinema homework, which is in the episode description. All right, Maverick, I'm going to throw another news story at you because we've never talked about this movie together on Cinemaholics or at all in life.
Hit me.
Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
The 2009/2010, I mean, it was re-released. James Cameron movie, highest grossing movie of all time. Mm-hmm. This was the movie, it's funny, when, because you know Michael, you know, listeners and viewers don't know Michael, but when Star Wars The Force Awakens was coming out, Michael, our friend, made that bet with me that he believed Star Wars The Force Awakens would beat Avatar for highest grossing movie of all time.
Mm-hmm. I remember
and
that bet.
He came up like 700 million short or something like that, yeah. I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
classic.
But I mean, Avatar, but it came close within the grand scheme of things. For a while, Avatar was like way ahead of like any other. I mean, $2.7 billion or something like that. And Force Awakens did amazingly well. It ended up being number three, I believe, right behind Titanic. And it was like really close to Titanic, mm-hmm. like $2 billion or so. So, Avatar, how did you feel about those movies? This news story has to do with them.
I mean, I like everyone else, I really enjoyed the aesthetic of Avatar.
Who couldn't, right?
It was beautiful to watch. The world they created was awesome. I could care less about the story. I was not interested in seeing Pocahontas on alien planet, like it wasn't my thing. So
yeah,
there's not, unfortunately, like it's the highest grossing movie.
Yeah,
a lot of people love this movie, a lot of people don't love this movie.
It basically built the Chinese box office,
but there's not much to talk about when it comes to this movie, I feel like.
Yeah,
it's just like,
yeah,
it was, well, really visually pleasing. Okay. And that's what I care about, at least.
Yeah, that's the thing though, some people say like don't underestimate James Cameron, and people thought Avatar was gonna be a big, you know, flop. So this new story you'll find interesting. I mean, you know, of course, that, you know, they've been saying that sequels are going to be coming for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But the sequels finally got a release date. Mark Cassidy released this news. You can check it out once again in our cinema homework. We'll link to it. The Avatar sequels officially have release dates, and they span from 2020, in just a couple of years, to 2025.
How many are there?
So, yeah, I'm going to make sure I get this right. I was going to say there's going to be four sequels.
Wow.
Okay, so Avatar 2 would start in 2020. They would all have December release dates.
Okay.
And Avatar 5 would come out in 2025.
Do we have any hints as to what these storylines are? Like, what's the sequel going to be
about? We really don't know. James Cameron has been kind of... So this is a quote from Sam Worthington. And he said, this film is going to be like nothing you've ever seen. The world is bigger than the first one, but essentially it's a movie about family. Jake will still have that essence of a kid seeing the world for the first time. That doesn't make sense. But he's been living in the world for a while now. So what's this world he's seeing now for the first time? The film will explore that within his family dynamic. Which, how do you still call it Avatar if he doesn't go back and forth? I mean, spoilers for the original Avatar, but he permanently becomes a Na'vi.
Yeah.
So... That's interesting to me.
No,
I guess
longer
just
an Avatar. Yeah. I'm excited to see four more of that, I guess. I don't know.
This is why they had to call it The Last Airbender, really?
Hey, whoa.
Oh, sorry.
We don't talk about that movie.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't bring that up. I do think it's interesting because, like, Avatar 2, for example, I mean, December 18th, I mean, that is like a Star Wars week.
Yeah.
And the trilogy for Star Wars is going to be ending a year before this one. That cannot be a coincidence. And we have to keep in mind that the original Avatar came out in December of 2009.
Yeah.
And that is like a very heavy, I mean, the holidays, it's a big week. Some of the highest grossing movies of all time have come out around this time. Frozen, for example, highest grossing animated movie of all time.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird. I don't like this news at all, actually, because my thing is I've never liked it when Marvel and DC, when they just give us so many dates ahead of time where they're like, and then we're going to do an Avengers movie in 12 years.
Yeah.
And we actually have a news story coming up that's about Marvel, but just the fact that, like, I know now there's going to be an Avatar movie one after another, I don't like this at all.
You could have told me there was just one more coming out. And I would have been like, don't care.
That would be great. Like, honestly, if they were like, hey, there's going to be another Avatar, I'd be like, okay, cool. That's fine. But they're saying, like, there's going to be four in a row. And they're going to be, like, seizing up, like, that release date and taking it away from, like, other movies that could be... I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I hope the movies are really good. But if they aren't, I mean, that's going to just be a huge bummer.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said before, there's just not much you can say about it.
Yeah.
It's just like... Okay, I guess we'll see what happens in 2025.
It's such a James Cameron thing, too, you know, to do a sequel like over a decade later. I mean, the guy never does. Like, he's done movies that are sequels, but it just seems weird to me that he's doing this. He's franchising out. He used to be that director that didn't do stuff like that, and it's a little weird. And
And if you're gonna do that, if you're gonna franchise out, like you said, this guy,
look at his filmography. I mean, Aliens. Right? Yeah. Titanic, Avatar. He has the two highest grossing movies of all time. He could make any movie that he wants.
And you know what he wants?
This is it?
Avatar 2.
Look, we're talking about this in 2017. I feel like this is something that's been on my mind for years because Avatar has been something that like they've been saying is coming and coming and coming. Just kind of getting off my chest, but we should probably move on. Don't forget, you can get more details on the story when shooting starts, all that extra stuff in Cinema Homework. But let's get off to our last piece of news before we jump into our main segment, and that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is going to be interesting. Ooh. So, Josh Wilding broke this story on We Got Discovered, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe may never be the same again after Avengers Infinity War. So, you know, you just saw Civil War for the first time. Not just, I mean, it was a little bit.
I've seen it a couple times.
Oh, was that the second time you had seen it? Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought that was your first. Maybe I'm thinking, I'm conflating it with Guardians for some reason. But so, you know, obviously Infinity War, really looking forward to it. It's still a ways away, but this has kind of been the movie that has been set up since 2012. It's going to be the Thanos movie. You know, originally it was going to be a two-parter, and now they're kind of like looking at it differently. Like, it's still supposed to have like a follow-up or something, but it's not quite as official. Well, This is interesting because Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige, he's the guy who's responsible for all of this. He is basically the franchise architect of this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. He came out and he said something kind of interesting that people are kind of scratching their heads about because he was asked like, "Hey, like, you know, Phase 4 is coming up, and you know, you guys haven't really said anything about what you're going to be doing 2020 on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know that a Captain Marvel movie is coming. We know that, you know, we're expecting a bunch of stuff to happen eventually. But, you know, what is the Marvel Cinematic Universe post Infinity War? And this is what he had to say. Truthfully, other than knowing that we're going to work with Sony on another Spider-Man film, and James Gunn is committed to continuing with the Guardians at some point, it's all about Phase 3. I don't even know if it will be called Phase 4. Things will be very different after 2019, after May of 2019. He said in a different news story that, the same lines, he said, like, it's going to be like a new kind of thing, I think was like the language he used. Like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to look kind of different.
Okay.
Like, we have no idea what that means, but the idea of it being different kind of is interesting to me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ambiguous, so I think it leaves a lot for you to just be like,
how are you filling in that blank?
When you first said it's going to be different after 2020, my first thought is, okay, so they're going to kill off someone major, and it's going to like change the dynamic of everything. Makes sense. Going to change the movies. So that's my first thought.
Yeah.
And my first person I thought was Iron Man. I think they would kill him off.
Either him or Chris Evans or both.
Yeah, something like that. It's got to be one of them because those are kind of like the two faces of what this universe is right now.
Right, right.
So for me, that makes sense. I don't want that, but like I get it if it happens. But I don't feel like it's going to be that easy.
Well, yeah. Well, okay. Fair enough. I would say that what I would do if I were in their shoes.
Tell us, John.
I was just teasing like, hey, you know, like we need to... The Marvel Cinematic Universe will get stale. These actors don't want to keep doing this forever.
Yeah, for sure.
We've already seen through Marvel Comics and the decisions that they make as an entertainment studio overall, they have been putting characters in their comics ahead of time to sort of deal with this. What I would do is I would end Phase 4 and then kick off basically a new version of the cinematic universe, or a new generation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let the characters retire and then start fresh with some new characters, a new Iron Man necessarily, but you switch up the Avengers team. You start bringing on new characters. You do new movies.
So new superheroes,
New superheroes. Okay. You could also like have one or two successors, right? You could have a couple of Avengers like, you know, mainstays coming back. I don't think that you have to keep doing the same thing with these same characters over and over again. And I think that you could totally like rethink what these movies even are. Maybe they could even rethink like, hey, let's twist the formula instead of like a couple of, bless you.
I'm all over the place today. I'm sorry.
Instead of like a couple of movies like leading up to one, right? You're okay. Like, oh, now we have the origin movie for this and this, and now it's Avengers. They could do something totally different. So that's what I would do. I would be like, okay, let's do a new generation. Let's.
I would love to see a new generation of Avengers, right? With new superheroes, new actors, and stuff like that. That'd be great.
They could do a more diverse cast. They have a lot of characters in the catalog that they kind of sort of created for this.
Yeah.
Like, if we're really being honest. So that makes me kind of excited, but I'm open to all kinds of possibilities.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of places that go with it. I didn't think about what you had just laid out, but that'd be cool. I would love the idea of a new universe, kind of just starting over from scratch with some new characters.
Sure. Well, let us know. Your cinema homework here. I mean, look in the details. Look at the timeline. Look at the movies coming out. But Cinemaholics, let us know what you wish for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Post 2020,
exactly. Before we get into our main segment, I do want to look up a review before I forget, because someone did review the show.
Is it the one that you sent to us?
This one just came in yesterday. So this is awesome. So G. Pratt Medford said, love this show, gives 5 stars, thank you. You guys are killing it. Keep up the good work. One of my favorite podcasts. I just want more. Well, here we are. Thank you so much. And we also got a review from Skipper Fox, who said, don't stop. This podcast is so epic. I listen to it mostly for the movie reviews, especially for movies I haven't seen and I doubt I ever will. But love hearing reviews for them. I'm so glad you guys know what you're talking about. We convinced them we know what we're talking. I think he's just talking about Will.
Yeah, that's 100% about
Will. That's got to be it.
I'm still struggling with my sin of sobriety, so I know that has nothing to do with me. I'm just here as a filler,
We're
really.
Trying to fill. Yeah, I am too at this point. But we are going to talk about The Lost City of Z, which I think will be an interesting fill-in.
Yeah, we're actually going to try and make the review as long as the movie was. So you guys will be here for a while.
We're going to be here for like 2 hours and 20 minutes. let's wrap things up then. Or not wrap things up. Let's kick things up.
Yeah. But before we do, thanks to those people for commenting.
Yes.
And please, if you listen to the show or watch us on YouTube or whatever resource you own it, comment, review. We want to know. Even if you leave us a star, we want to know how we can improve for you.
For sure. Let's get into our main segment. Who were Rey's parents in Star Wars The Force Awakens? And when I was originally like coming to you about this, I remember I was like, can we talk just... It's been over a year. It's been a bit more than over a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about, in a way, like, was Star Wars The Force Awakens really all that good as a movie? I feel like since Rogue One came out, people have been kind of like, oh, Rogue One's so much better. I think we're a little bit divided. I think fans are on like, whether or not Force Awakens is like a good movie.
Yeah.
And I want to say before we jump into this main speculation stuff about The Last Jedi, because we did that on our bonus episode last week, last call. At the same time, I just really want to make it known that I think that the more I watch this movie, the more I get into Force Awakens and I theorize and I speculate on it, I think about it, the more I like it.
Every time I watch the movie, I love it more.
Yeah. And I didn't love it the first time I saw it. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I was like, this is great. I'm glad Star Wars is back. But I had issues with it.
Yeah.
But I remember you were like,
solid. And like I said in last call, my one issue with The Force Awakens was that I felt there were too many times that they were just kind of trying to remind us they were a Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
The big moments of like, oh yeah, it's the character I love, or it's this, or it's a funny moment that they've done before. Those were the things I didn't like as much. I really enjoyed the original story, and I thought it was a good movie. I was way more into it than you were, but I'm with you now, where we watched it just the other day.
Yeah.
And I was like, this movie's great. Like, I really enjoyed this film.
It's really solid. It's not airtight, but I mean, it's just... The level of effort and detail that they put into it, it's very well shot. It looks really good. And the criticisms are valid. There's definitely stuff to complain about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking at a spectacle movie, is entertaining, super entertaining.
I will also say that the more that we dive into these Rey theories and people point out little details, that some of those errors that I originally didn't like about the movie kind of become okay for me. Some of these errors start to make sense to me when you start laying out different theories and ideas.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay, so maybe that was intentional. Maybe this little thing that people complained about was actually a very important detail of the movie that a lot of people missed.
Sure.
But good movie. Love it.
Yeah.
I want to watch it right
now. One of the biggest problems I had with it was kind of like the Rey character felt so incomplete for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things like, I want more, but I was also a little annoyed that we didn't get enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're talking about today, because I think I'm really hoping The Last Jedi does fill in those blanks and that it makes the previous movie a little bit better. So we have some stuff. One of the reasons we are talking about this at all too is because when talking about Ray's parents, first of all, everybody has their own theory. Everybody has their own idea of like Ray's.
There are so many theories.
There's a lot of them. And a lot of them are really smart and they're really interesting. I did a video about this earlier this week and it kind of, you know, blew up a little bit. And like a lot of people are into it.
His mom shared it one time. That's it. That's all that happened.
There are a couple of flaws in it. It's called the lightsaber theory. And that's in the cinema homework as well. And the idea is that I really believe that I've found like a little glitch in the Matrix, or I found something in the screenplay that sort of like outlines where Rey comes from based on like what makes sense for the plot. It's not one of the like really fun, you know, like I even had somebody who responded to it and was like, man, this theory makes sense, but it's just not as fun as like Rey being related to someone. And I'm like super, like I get that, but I also think that it's really boring for her to just be related to someone. But let's talk about when the movie, when we first saw the movie, Maverick, who did you think Rey was? What did you think the twist was?
When I first saw the movie,
yeah,
I had no idea. It was completely up in the air for me. I didn't really know what I thought. I think...
Such a Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I know. It's cool. It's whatever.
We can't be sure.
But the first time I really sat down and thought about it, I can't honestly remember what my first belief, my first theory was, right. But I think I was on the train of, I think she might be somehow related to either a Solo or a Skywalker.
Okay.
I was somewhere in there. That's not where I ended up. And before I was with you,
I don't know about this. Okay.
Before I was with you for your most recent revelation of theory, which I actually agree with.
Well, and you know, just to be straight, like before I came out with it, you were among the first people that I like, we were watching the movie and I paused.
Yeah.
It.
That's my one claim to fame. Cause I'm not famous and I've done nothing important, but I was sitting next to John when he said,
you were a cinemaholic.
Well,
are a cinemaholic.
I'm cinesober, so I'm like,
oh, you're right, yeah. You're right.
Anyway, my one claim to fame is that I was sitting on the same couch as John Negroni when he paused the movie and said, I think this. So, like, I was there. So, like,
you were there.
When they make the statue, I'll be in the statue.
Your encouragement kept me from...
I said, like, one thing. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So, here, I'm going to read you guys, or kind of summarize what my... Until we had the discussion recently about your new lightsaber theory,
yeah.
What I was under the belief of. And this all comes from a post that a Reddit user had.
Who's a Reddit
said,
user?
I can't pronounce it. Niterider 79.
I love it.
NYTERYDER 79.
There you go.
And he was one of the people that had the theory that she was related to Obi-Wan. And when
right, I remember, when did this theory start getting traction? I want to say it was like...
This post was...
Gotta be like really soon after the movie.
December 22nd, 2015.
Okay.
Is when
not even a week later.
This isn't the Reddit post I'm reading right now. It's right. A post about the Reddit post. So this is when it started to blow up.
It's a popular one. It's a popular theory, yeah.
Just to basically summarize it, and I'm not doing a great job of it, but I will, is that after the fall of the Jedi Order,
yep.
Ben Kenobi, who was incredibly loyal to his celibacy and to the Order, then had nothing to really uphold. The Jedi was no more.
Right.
The Order was gone. So therefore, he didn't really... have the order to submit to. He didn't have these rules that he really had to follow anymore. It was basically just him. So the theory goes that at that point, it's totally acceptable for Ben Kenobi to have taken up a family.
Sounds like a loophole. It's totally acceptable.
I probably shouldn't say it's not acceptable, but it's totally plausible that at that point, Ben Kenobi could have, you know, had a family, had some kids, got married, all that kind of stuff, and that somehow, somewhere along the lines, Rey is a descendant of that.
Right. So some people think she's like a granddaughter, or she's connected to him, even if he didn't have kids, like if he has family or something. Yeah. And you know, first I'll say before I poke holes into this, the idea that like you know, there is some like merit to this idea of like, oh, you know, like he became Ben Kenobi. What was his life like between the prequels and the trilogy? My issue though comes with, for one thing. Him sort of turning his back on the Jedi Order like that, I get that he was in exile, but he was a hermit. And like to have to explain like what happened to his family, to like do all of this extra stuff, and you have to explain who he is again to people who don't know if they just watched Force Awakens, I don't think that's going to be it. If this happened in Last Jedi and they were like, Obi-Wan, like lots of people would be like, huh?
Yeah.
Like he didn't have, you know, like they'd have to explain it and they'd have to use precious screen time to explain it. And the people who would get it would be like, called it. It wouldn't be surprising. And I don't think it would be narratively satisfying.
Yeah.
Right. Like what significance is it really that she's the heir of a Kenobi? Right. Cause that's not the Kenobi character.
For
archetype.
Sure. Yeah. No,
he's the mentor. The idea that like his legacy would, it would be more interesting if she was descended from someone evil, which is why I always thought the Palpatine stuff was interesting.
Okay.
Like, oh, what if Palpatine had like a son secretly and his son had a kid, and you know, that's one theory. And I think it's also kind of weird.
Yeah. Another big part of the Obi-Wan theory is that Obi-Wan also has like a history and a past with the lightsaber that's so important in the movie. I'm just going to read this because I don't want to summarize it. It says here, yes, Rey feels called to Luke's lightsaber and can wield it skillfully, especially considering her lack of training. To be fair, Finn is also able to do this fairly well too. But let's not forget that Obi-Wan Kenobi was also in possession of that lightsaber, which was originally Anakin Skywalker's, for at least 18 years before he delivered it to Luke. The Skywalker lightsaber was also based heavily on the design of Obi-Wan's own lightsaber, so the connection is definitely significant there.
I just don't see... I mean...
That part I didn't care about.
That's just trivia. Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily anything that connects Rey to him. Mm-hmm. Really, it's just the lightsaber I think is important, but I don't think it's important because of Obi-Wan. I think it's important because of Luke and Anakin, and the Obi-Wan fitting into that doesn't really make sense to me. And I get like the appeal though, because I think people like this theory because they think it would be surprising, but I don't think it would be surprising for the right reasons, which is why I'm not a big supporter.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like I said, this was just my belief until we kind of sat down and talked about your... This was the one I believed on. Now, a lot of the things that this theory lays out, I don't necessarily agree with. Like, one of the big claim to fame on this is that her accent matches Obi-Wan's, and that you can hear Obi-Wan's voice calling to her in her Force back and stuff like that. Those things I didn't really care about. It was mostly just the principle of the fall of the Jedi Order, and that leaves room for him to possibly have a family. And that kind of... That was the part that I cared about until the lightsaber theory happened.
One fateful day.
Until John paused the movie and said, wait!
Whoa! I mean, there are a lot of other theories out there. There's one theory that says that Rey is like another chosen one, like Anakin, that she was like an immaculately concepted, which I think is weird because that's just more stuff that like they would have to explain that Force Awakens doesn't even hint to. It's a prequel thing.
Yeah, and maybe it's just me, but they're like, that's not interesting to me. Yeah. Like, I don't care about that. And I think... If they're trying to make this new, you know, series and trilogy and everything, why would they do that again? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it does kind of feel like that was like one of the big complaints. But I mean, if they already decided to do that a while ago, they wouldn't just change course now, would they?
For sure.
There's other stuff like, oh, she's a Solo. You know, a lot of people like, I remember the big debate. I thought she was Luke's kid when I first saw the movie because the lightsaber stuff. I was like, I just felt like the movie was like trying to tell me that like, oh, she's another Skywalker because of all this stuff. I've sort of changed my position on that, but I remember when the movie came out, I was, you know, people were, it was like Skywalker versus Solo. People were like, no, she's like a secret kid, or like Han had her with some other woman, and like all this other extra stuff. And I think it all just sort of falls apart with the fact that Han doesn't really recognize her, that like Leia, you know, why would she let another kid go, you know, if she cared so much about Ben, and like, how does that really fit into this? And like, it's just something that I feel like would create a bunch of plot holes if it happened. And another thing, I don't think it's very interesting for her. I don't see I sort of get why it's fun to theorize about it, but I don't get why people want it to be true.
Yeah.
Like, do you really want that to be it? I mean,
now,
what does that do?
Like I was with you. When the movie came out, yeah, I was like, oh, maybe she's Kylo's sister or all this kind of stuff. But like now, looking back on the movie and everything, like, I don't think I'd get nearly as much satisfaction from her just being a Solo kid that got lost, or, you know, Luke's kid that he hid, or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I mean, okay, I guess, but like, I think it's better to have kind of what your theory goes off of, that it's completely different.
Well, I mean, and there's one more theory we can talk about that I think is a popular one, right? So we've covered the big popular one, Skywalker, because the lightsaber stuff, people say like, oh, well, it's a Skywalker. I mean, those are the movies. You know, how can you do this without a Skywalker as a protagonist? I say easily.
Yeah.
If you're Disney and you're like, we need to, you know, do something new. The Solos, you know, I get that too. I mean, the idea that she and Kylo having like a sibling rivalry makes kind of like nerd. The idea that like they say like Han is the father she never had. Okay, whatever. And then the Palpatine stuff I think is kind of fun, but I don't think that it's supported at all by Force Awakens. And then there is just a theory where people are like, she came from nothing. She's just kind of like, she has a family. She wants to see her family again, but there's nothing seriously connecting her to anybody. And I also think that that's kind of ridiculous, because one of the things I noticed, so like, as we pivot into lightsaber theory, one of the first things I've mentioned is that this Jakku place has so many coincidences, right? Like, there are so many things.
This place was crafted close for
proximity. Rey. It really feels like Rey has been put here.
Yeah.
by someone in Luke's inner circle or Luke himself, because Lor San Tekka, one of Luke's longest allies, somebody that he helped him find Jedi relics and protect them from the Empire, he's like close enough that BB-8 can go do a beeline to Rey.
Yeah.
Right? And then the fact that, like, and also that Lor San Tekka is able to find Luke whenever he wants, I think that that's kind of significant, you
Absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
And I'm not necessarily saying, like, I think it's kind of interesting that maybe he's like an Obi-Wan, like, kind of watching over her and protecting her, but I don't think she's meant to ever, like, I don't think anyone was supposed to come get her or anyone, like, when that ship leaves in the vision, I don't think anyone was trying to get back to her. I think they knew that she had force sensitivity and were isolating her in an area where she wouldn't tap into it, because we know, thanks to Last Jedi, Luke kind of wants the Jedi to end, and obviously Kylo Ren and the First Order would kill Rey if they had known, if she was like experimenting with the Force.
Yeah, if they sensed a Force sensitive person in their area, like that'd be over.
It'd be over. And then there's the other coincidence that the Millennium Falcon is right there, and like, yeah, we're told that the Millennium Falcon was stolen and everything, and like that's how we're kind of led to believe, but I really don't buy that. I don't buy that, like, that kind of coincidence and like that kind of conflation of events. It doesn't make sense to me. The fact that the lightsaber calls out to her as well is definitely a giveaway that she's connected to these characters. And I don't think it's as cut and dry as like she has the Force for no reason. I don't think that's how the Force works. So the lightsaber theory is really simple on that. So if you're assuming that she is connected to these characters, or that like they know who she is sort of like by circumstance, not because they actually ever met her, you know, based on like the way that Han, Leia, and Maz like talk around her, and like there's clearly like Han, so like Maz goes to Han and she's like, who's the girl? And Han is like, he doesn't say anything because it cuts. But then the next time we see Maz, she is like orchestrating a way for Rey to find the lightsaber. I mean, she, because literally like she's waiting for Rey as soon as she's done with her vision.
And she's right there.
The door literally just like opens for Rey. Yeah. It's like completely unguarded. It's pretty obvious to me that Maz is like setting this up.
For sure.
So then you have that. I think that like Han, if you watch, when we were watching the movie, like you notice it too, right? Like Han is kind of like slowly like realizing like, wait, this girl, and I think he's putting the pieces together. He's like, Jakku, she knows like the Falcon really well. She's really smart.
Yeah.
Something, is she this girl? So,
and you see that through a lot of the characters too, yeah, where they initially are like, who are you? And then there's a cut scene where they're like, who's the girl?
Right.
And then they slowly start to act like they might know her.
And at this point, some people would put into that, well, that means that she's related to Luke or something like that, right? I don't think so. So then the actual lightsaber part of the lightsaber theory is that we can sort of tell who she is based on the lightsaber that Luke has, mm-hmm, or when she touches it. That entire vision. I think what people miss when they watch all of those scenes, because I'll walk you through it, right? So you start with the scene where she's like on Bespin, and it's that scene in Empire Strikes Back where Luke is fighting Vader. And then it cuts to she's like, she's at the bottom of some rubble, and Luke is right there with R2-D2, and they're looking at like, they're in front of a fire, and the Last Jedi trailer shows that they're apparently like looking at a bunch of ruins. So a lot of people think that this is like the Jedi massacre that they're looking at.
Okay.
And then the next scene is Kylo Ren killing somebody in the rain, and he has the rest of the Knights of Ren with him. And then the next scene after that is Rey getting left behind on Jakku, and she's yelling for them to come back, and Unkar Plot has her, and the ship leaves. And then the final one is the vision of what's about to happen on Starkiller Base. And I think that's the key, because that tells you two things. One, all of these scenes are in chronological order, starting with, like, it's like a little trail. Mm-hmm. And every one of these scenes, the lightsaber is present. And because the lightsaber is present, you can sort of guess who it was that dropped Rey off. Because who would have dropped Rey off and had that lightsaber? Would it be Luke Skywalker? Right? Because
Palpatine.
Because who has the lightsaber after him? Maz. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of ways to go around this. And like when I came out of this theory, a lot of people were kind of poking holes in like how these scenes play, because people have been pointing out that Kylo doesn't turn to the dark side until after Rey gets dropped off. So some people are wondering if that means that character we see with the Knights of Ren isn't actually Ben Solo, but Ben Solo becomes like the new Kylo Ren. Mm. So that's one theory on it.
Okay.
So like, who left Rey behind could have been somebody. Some people think that it could have been Ben Solo who left her there, and he had Luke's lightsaber because Luke would have given it to him. So there's stuff like that. I still believe that if we look at the timelines, you can surmise that Luke is like looking at the Jedi Massacre and he has the blue lightsaber. And I think at this point, her parents have died. Mm-hmm. And I think that Rey's parents were Jedi apprentices.
Someone that was being trained by Luke.
Trained by Luke.
Okay.
And I think that he gave the lightsaber to one of them. So one of them could be a Jedi apprentice. One of them could just not be in the picture.
Just be
right?
A spouse, yeah.
Could be her mother or father. For the sake of, let's just say her mother, you know, and you could just, yeah. So let's say like Luke decides that Rey's mother is going to be his successor instead of Ben Solo because he's decided that Ben Solo can't do it because there's just too much conflict in him. Leia kind of like hints that he always had like a struggle with like the Vader
and dark
him.
And yeah.
Right. So like out of jealousy, he tries to get that blue lightsaber because he wants it. He wants Anakin's lightsaber.
Yeah, he feels like he's the rightful heir.
Right. Right. So then we can sort of like speculate on like what these scenes mean. Like, does that mean the rain scene that's him and he's getting the blue lightsaber back? I could also see it being that that's Luke and he has a blue lightsaber and this is like a point in time before Ben Solo becomes Kylo Ren and he's spared by Kylo, this like other Knight of Ren with the crossguard. And then in the next scene, it's him dropping off Rey, or it could be her mother, right? It could be her mother could be in that rain scene.
Okay.
That would make sense to me. And then her mother could be the one dropping her off. And then, but she has the blue lightsaber. And then it's after that that she's killed. And then Luke has her blue lightsaber and then gives it to Maz. And then, so then that's the basis of the theory. And then, of course, you have the future where Rey has the blue lightsaber when she's fighting Kylo Ren. But that's the connective tissue. Like in each of these scenes, because it's the lightsaber that she touched and it's the Force that's calling out to her, I think the idea is that that lightsaber is in each of those scenes. So I think Last Jedi is going to finish this puzzle out for us. But to me, the thing that makes the most sense to me is this idea that like it's a legacy thing. And that's the source of conflict between Kylo and Rey. And that's it, basically.
So you're
there's a longer version of this.
There's a 25-hour long version of this.
15 minutes.
You can
read it or watch the video. But that's the best I can explain it.
Yeah.
Kind of off the cuff like this.
A lot of people seem to agree with you, too. I mean, it blew up pretty quick. And I think there's been a lot of support with the idea. And when you explained it to me for the first time, what happened, we were watching it, and you were like, holy crap, the lightsaber is in every one of these visions.
Right.
And we kind of talked it out, and when you had mentioned...
And I mentioned the video, they're like, oh, I probably am not guessing this like 100% right, but I think that is like a starting
the
place.
The basic, yeah.
Yeah, and you can start to like figure out, especially when you're watching Last Jedi, I think we'll get the twist, we'll get it a little earlier if you keep that in mind.
Well, because J.J. Abrams, shortly after the movie, had said that her parents are in the movie, right? And I think...
Like they could be in it, but like we don't see them.
Yeah, and I think that led people to believe so strongly that it had to be a Kenobi or, you know, or Skywalker.
It had to be a character that we already knew, rather than a character that makes sense for this new
trilogy. But that statement also still fits with your theory in the fact that they could totally be one of the bodies in the rain scene.
They could be like the person Rey is like superimposing.
Yeah, they could be the person driving the ship away. I mean, so there's a lot of room for your lightsaber theory to fit in with the statements that we've been told so far.
I don't think that I've gotten it perfect, but I do think that it's sort of, for me, it seals the deal that she's not related to these characters.
Yeah.
Because
which gets me excited, honestly. Yeah. I'm way more excited by the idea that we're going to see a new person with a new... And that's what I said in Last Call, too, is what I want from this new trilogy is to see a new trilogy. Right. I don't want to see a bunch of old Star Wars stuff repeated. I want to see a Star Wars movie with an original story and an original line. And I think 100%. This is a great way to do that. And I think this kind of accomplishes that.
Or at least
that.
Like a version of this, right?
Yeah.
And like a way that like... I think that... The conflict between her and Kylo is so much more interesting if the idea is that she is a successor by merit.
Not by blood. Yeah.
Because that's a great way to subvert the original trilogy, which like Luke's power and Vader's redemption, all that stuff was rooted in like who your father is. Mm-hmm. This one is rooted in something totally different. It's rooted in like earning it.
It also,
and that's a good way to do it.
I think it also kind of makes Kylo's like extreme outbursts a little bit more, yeah. Like it makes sense more, because it's like this guy is raised almost to believe like he's the only logical next step. Mm-hmm. And then now it's, you know, a girl who's not even related, who's not even a part of this. That would make anyone crazy. So I think it kind of
makes
helps,
me crazy just thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I think it kind of helps explain and support Kylo Ren's like extreme emotional imbalance, which I'm sure was already present before Rey was in the picture. Right. But I'm sure like seeing Rey with a lightsaber and realizing who she is a point to be like, oh my God, you know, just push someone over the edge. So I'm really excited to see their tension and their balance and see what happens in this next movie.
Okay. Well, that's a lot to talk about. If you're interested and you want to like submit your own like take on this theory, your own theories, who you think Rey's parents are, I know a lot of you are probably like, I don't even care at this point. I just want to watch the movie. I get that.
Same.
Let us know what you think. And of course, for your cinema homework, we have the lightsaber theory for you to check out and for you to agree or disagree with. Or, you know, people have been adding stuff to it, mm-hmm. and making it better. So that's really cool too. The comments are full of like really cool add-ons and stuff that I didn't even consider. So that said, let's get into our review of The Lost City of Zed. It's Z, but like in other countries, they pronounce Z a different way. So that's why I think some people get a little bit confused by that, depending on where you're from. But we watched this movie the other day, and you know, our very own it was already reviewed like 6 months ago by Lauren Humphreys Brooks. She gave it a very interesting review at the New York Film Festival last year. And so, but before I talk about what she thought of the movie, let's do an IMDb synopsis here. It is a true life drama centering on British explorer Colonel Percival Fawcett, who disappeared while searching for a mysterious city in the Amazon in the 1920s. The movie was directed by James Gray, and it was written by David Grant. It's based on a book. And the movie stars Charlie Hunnam and Robert Pattinson, Sienna Miller, Tom Holland. Mav, this was an interesting movie. Before we get into like what the official review for it, and like Lauren has some interesting thoughts on this movie. What did you think of Lost City?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm at.
Here's where you're at.
Here's where I'm at, okay?
That's it?
I guess. Honestly, what I think where I'm at is that I just need more time to process it.
Okay.
I think I'm just kind of in this place where I'm just like, I haven't really decided yet. With most movies, I can decide, you know, like, what was the movie we saw? The Belko Experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it. I was like, whatever. And then the next day, I was like, oh, yeah, that's really... And I think with this one, there's a lot going on in this movie, even though it's a calm movie. And I think
for the most part.
Yeah, you know, I mean, whatever. And I think I just need more time to kind of process all these layers. I will say my initial complaint was that the movie felt like a literal eternity. Like, I didn't think the movie was
going to... It was really long for you, yeah.
It was long. And that... Normally when I have
2 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Normally when I have that complaint, it's just like, man, this movie sucks. When is it going to end? And it's an hour and a half movie. This was just felt like a long movie because it was just like a long time to be sitting.
Not because it dragged, but because yeah, you were just because like, I don't it
was
do
like,
stuff.
Man. Yeah, I was like, man, like, what is it? The next day?
You it's know? Tough though because like there are movies like Hateful Eight, which was even longer than this one. But
was
like,
Hateful Eight really
even,
longer?
I don't even look at my clock. You know when.
Hateful Eight is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I could not keep my eyes off the screen.
It's not what this is about.
Yeah, longer movie than this one.
Yeah. So maybe it had to do with just, you know, Hateful Eight was obviously a little bit more of like a kind of a dramatic,
exciting. Yeah,
you know. The movie was really good. I really liked Z. I have nothing like bad to say about characters or pacing or plot. Like, I think it was really well done. I think I need to stop saying I think. But
we know you think, but
the fact that it was 2.5 hours long kind of did take away from certain parts for me, just because at some point I was just like, man, like this is good, but I'm ready to go.
And I think the important thing about that is like, it's not necessarily based on like what I've studied secretly of your movie habits.
Yeah.
It's not the typical like genre I think you're that into. Mm-hmm. So I think that it kind of makes sense. Like, I feel like you are really into these smaller character dramas like the Good Will Huntings, right?
Stop. I'm gonna cry right now.
You know, Sing Street, movies that are a little bit more grounded.
Okay,
this one is, it's an adventure movie, but it's also World War One, and it's also survival in the jungle, and it's also Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And like all of that stuff is like juggled and balanced in my opinion really well.
Yeah.
With great performances, and it's I think it's splendid. I really dug this movie personally.
Yeah, that's the one thing I will say. even with my time issues or whatever with it, I thought every person on screen did a great job.
Sure.
I thought everyone was just really, really well, performing really well. I thought the story was really good. I mean, I don't have a lot of complaints about this movie. I can't say too many bad things about it. I'm just not fully there to be like, yeah.
That's fine. I think that it's still like, you know, the fact that it wasn't in your genre, the fact that you didn't hate it, I do think says a lot. But,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting because Lauren's review for it, she was a little bit, you know, I think she was closer to where you're at here.
Okay.
So she gave it 2.5 stars.
Out of 5?
Out of 5.
Whoa.
Yeah. So she gave it a score of middling. She said, despite gorgeous cinematography and a strong cast, The Lost City of Z is a shallow and overly romantic film that falls into the trap of hero worship. Mm. I disagree. I honestly don't really understand her criticism here. I think that this movie is a masterpiece. I think the idea of it being overly romantic, she's either saying that about the character of Charlie Hunnam and Sienna Miller, or she's saying romantic as in it's like romanticizing exploration. So this takes place partly in Bolivia, but even that I don't think I fully agree with, because they show you the horrors, right? It's I don't think there was any romanticizing going on. You know, she does mention a few things. Like she says, the cast of The Lost City of Z makes a good effort. However, there's no doubt that Gray's directing, such as it is more than serviceable and often very beautiful. Hunnam is excellent in a straightforward, dashing role that would have featured Errol Flynn or Stuart Granger back in classic Hollywood. Robert Pattinson, meanwhile, continues on his quiet quest to prove that he's an excellent character actor, disappearing behind a beard into his role with no sign of wanting to steal the spotlight. So we definitely agree on that stuff.
I just want to say that really funny, because you told me Robert Pattinson was going to be in the movie, and
I didn't figure it out.
I haven't seen a lot of movies with him in it. My only really reference to him, I didn't see Twilight, but obviously I know like he was in that.
Right.
So that's my last visual of him.
Hold on, Harry Potter.
I don't care about Harry Potter.
You watched Harry Potter though, right?
Which one? Probably not. That's honestly not
the answer to that question is like, yeah, I watched all of the Harry Potter.
Yeah, movies. No, that's not my answer. And I'm going to get suspended.
You are so cinesober. It's like you're a cine-teetotaler.
See, that's the thing. That my lack of love for Harry Potter has very little to do with my like not seeing movies. It's more of like I just don't care about Harry Potter.
Wow.
And I'm sorry. Anyway,
yeah.
That's my reference for him. So when I saw his character, I literally didn't realize it was him until like 2 hours and 29 minutes in.
Well, even me, like I've seen him in a bunch of movies, but like I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's Robert Pattinson. I didn't figure it out until, like, a while after he was introduced. So, yeah, amazing. He just, like, disappeared into the role.
He did great.
I really dug this movie. I love the variety of it. I think that I agree with Lauren about the cinematography is gorgeous. I think the cast is great. Mm-hmm. And I think that if there were criticisms that I could understand, they would be in, like, what the themes of it really are all about. And I do think it's a thinker. I think it's a movie that, like, you really do have to sit with. Because there is a lot of interesting stuff going on here with like the idea of like the British explorers thinking that the savages are savage, and sort of like his like obsession with finding this city, and like how he's broken down as a person while searching for these people that like they believe they're superior to, the idea of like what makes a civilization. I mean, the fact that the World War is in here is absolutely not the fact that they took a true story and they added what I think is a lot of thematic depth is really good. I think the best biopics do that. It's not necessarily a biopic. It's like a bio adventure.
Yeah.
And I think I just had such a good time watching this and experiencing it. I do think that it is an acquired taste of a movie.
For sure.
Right? Like for me, this is an A movie. This Whoa. Is A territory. This is a movie that I believe just nails it in every way. But I do think I bump it down to A minus because I don't think it wraps up everybody else into its own little thing. I think it's a movie for film obsessed people because like it gives film lovers like so many things to like, you know, drop your jaw at. And I think I do understand like a lot of people do kind of are divided on James Gray's movies. Some people think they're amazing. I'm a big fan of his work, and I think some people kind of look at his stuff and are like a little bit less like not really the best. So he's a bit polarizing. I'm definitely though in the camp that loves him. So for that reason, I'm in it. If you watched any of his previous movies and you were like, not for me, this is probably going to be another situation for you like that.
Okay.
So that's Lost City of Z. I feel like we kind of covered it.
Yeah.
I think, let's do our final thoughts. What's your final grade, Mav?
See, it's
I already gave mine.
I know. You gave it... your final grade was an A-minus, you said, or A?
An A-minus. I do think it's still a must-see, but I don't think it's a guarantee that like everyone's going to get wrapped up into it. But if you like movies, I mean, this is a movie to see in the big screen. This is one you don't want to miss.
I agree with you. I think it's definitely a movie you want to see in the theaters. I can't imagine having the same experience at home.
Yeah.
Probably because I'd get bored in an hour and 50 minutes. But... the movie was really, really well done. I loved everything about the visuals and all that. I'm going to go with how I feel right now is like B. What okay. I think it really yeah. is and where I think I'll end up is probably closer to B plus A minus area, somewhere in there.
If you were being objective. But I think you should be like, this is you. This is your grade. Yeah.
For me right now,
yeah.
B. Like a good B, though. Not like it's B.
Kung Fu
like,
Panda 3 B.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, that's a great movie. But
I forgot you like that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel B. I do objectively think this movie is like a B plus A minus. So, like, it's a great movie. I think what you said, for people who love movies and film and just really good stuff, it's a movie worth seeing.
And even if you're cine-sober, I think there's a lot of really good stuff in here too.
Yeah, I don't think you have to have like a big film history knowledge to go in and
you
appreciate
don't. You don't have to like a lot of frame of reference or anything. You just have to like appreciate like art, you know, just in general.
You have to appreciate beautiful visuals and good acting.
And you're like, a musician, so like obviously, yeah.
The score was fantastic.
The score was amazing.
The score was fantastic.
I may admit, like the end credits, that was something that needed to be nailed.
And they nailed it.
They just, you remember, like, I couldn't get up. Like, I was staring at the screen and I was like, what? And I think some people do criticize the ending itself, like, how everything kind of wraps up. It's a true story. You can look it up if you really can't wait. But I love it the way it ends.
I do too.
I think it plays perfectly.
The ending is great. Perfect. Yeah.
All right. So I objectively think that we should move on into a couple of smaller reviews and then we'll wrap things up. Mav, you just saw seasons 1 and 2 of The Get Down.
The Get Down.
On Netflix.
Yes.
The Get Down, just to like, remind people, this is a big, kind of an event, you know, series that came out not that long ago, actually. Like
pretty new. I mean,
it's new, but they came out with part two, like, pretty quickly.
So part two actually isn't season two. It's just, like, the second half of season one. But yeah, it just came out a couple weeks ago.
It's an interesting format. Yeah, it's a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And they're longer. Yeah. So this is Baz Luhrmann helped create this show along with Steven Gerges. And Justice Smith is in this one. Shameik Moore, Jaden Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of really talented actors. But Mav, what did you think of, in general, this whole thing?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the show. I would say part one, in my opinion, was a lot better than part two. Hmm. And mostly just because I felt like part two... a lot fewer episodes, only 6 episodes in part two. And I can't remember how many part one had, but it was more. Part two tried to, I think, attack a lot of different things. And there were a lot of different small storylines, which I liked about part one.
I've only seen part of part one. Okay. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm not going to do any spoilers or anything, but there's a lot of subplots going on. And I really like that.
Okay.
In part two, I think that caught up with them a little too much. It felt like at some points they were really scrambling and writing to try and catch up with things that they had laid out in part one.
So then quickly, like if someone has no idea, like, what even is The Get Down?
Yeah.
That's, like, an easy way to, like, kind of...
So The Get Down is kind of like a dramatized version of, like, how hip-hop was born out of the poverty of the Bronx in the 70s. You follow Justice Smith. Mm-hmm. He's kind of the main character. He plays Ezekiel, who's this, like...
great and dope.
He's great in this, too.
Paper Towns,
yeah. He plays this kid who, you know, has had kind of a troubled past. The main theme is like everyone's just trying to get out of the Bronx. They're trying to get out of this thing. And Ezekiel's like a really smart kid who makes some poor decisions and is like really caught up in his crew. And he's kind of balancing between like a path to a better road versus staying in the Bronx. And if you are in any way attracted to music, the show is fantastic.
Awesome.
The music scenes are incredible. It's got so many different vibes. It's like a Bruce Lee Kung Fu movie with like a musical performances, kind of like,
and it's visually weird. Like it's different.
Yeah. And
Baz Luhrmann.
In part two, they start introducing like animated skits to kind of fill some of the parts. And I think that's more of a result because they were trying to fill some plot holes that they didn't do a good job with. But it works with vibe of the movie because it's just, it's like, it feels like a 70s just kind of like vibe. There's disco, there's really good hip hop, there's punk rock. Like it shows this introduction of how music kind of changed in the 70s, especially in the Bronx, but kind of over the course of the world too. There's a lot of different themes, but I love it. I highly recommend it. I think it's worth watching for anyone who likes music or kung fu movies or the 70s or disco or
all of it.
Or any of it. And all of the cast, which are relatively pretty young too, they all do great. I think it's a great performance all around from everybody. I think it's well written. Like I said, part two, I don't love as much. I feel like they're just kind of scrambling.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's going to be a continuation, like a part three or whatever, but part one's fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny because it's an expensive show. It's one of the most expensive shows of all time. It's
up there, and you'll see why if you watch it.
It's like the visual style of it is incredibly unique. Mm-hmm. And it's because, you know, this is the Moulin Rouge, Great Gatsby guy, and he has so much flair. And like the fact that he's doing this for a series is very interesting to me. I do want to like finish the whole thing myself and so that I can speak to it.
Yeah.
But we had Joseph Hernandez, our very own, do a review. It's in the Cinema Homework for We Got This Covered. You can read the whole thing. For part two, he gave it 4.5 stars. Fantastic. He said, The Get Down part two is a grand feast through the eyes and ears and a monumental achievement in episodic storytelling. So
I agree.
High praise. I think that
I'd probably give part two a 4. I'd give the overall series a 4.5.
Awesome. Still really high up there. Definitely sounds like it's worth checking out.
One of my favorite Netflix series shows I've watched, period. Oh,
whoa, that's okay. Interesting. We should have an episode one of these days where we get to the bottom of like what our favorite one is.
Ooh, that's good.
I think
that's a good last call right there.
First one I think right now is Stranger Things, but that could be challenged.
Ooh, yeah. House of Cards is up there for me.
House of Cards, I couldn't keep going with that one. But all right, let's wrap things up. So I did this next review, so it's in the Cinema Homework, but I reviewed season one of American Gods, the first three episodes.
I did not see this, but I heard you watching it.
That's right. It has some interesting scenes, to say the least. So American Gods is based on the novel by Neil Gaiman, one of my favorite authors of all time. He's created some of the best characters in fiction in the modern age. Like, he is our, like, I think some people might disagree with this, but I think that he is our Tolkien, but he's still alive. I mean, this guy, super, his contributions to graphic novels, to literature, he is fantastic. He's a really, really great writer. His book, American Gods, it's going to be a classic someday. It's a modern classic. And it's a story that I've been itching to see brought to life for a long time. I think American Gods is one of his best novels.
Wow.
I think his best character is probably still Sandman, Lucifer, which is a show already, and one of the best shows on television. And definitely worth checking out. But American Gods, so this is on Stars. If you can find any way to watch this show, please watch it. And I challenge anybody, like, if you don't even, like, okay, if you know what American Gods is, I feel like I don't have to sell people on this, except say that I really loved it and you probably will adore it. But for those of you who are kind of like, maybe I know who Neil Gaiman is. Maybe I read Neverwhere or something, and, you know, he's kind of like the adult Harry Potter guy, right? Mm-hmm. He wrote that same kind of story, but for adults. And he people know what have engaged with his work at some point. You know, I feel like all you have to know about American Gods is that it's a story that for Americans, it's incredibly poignant. It does things with the ideas of immigration and like people bringing in their gods from other countries, which how relevant could you get right now? But this is a book that came out
wrong.
This is a book that came out 16 years ago.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's so poignant right now, unintentionally, and
that's
the way
awesome.
That they handle it. And just, okay, that's thematic stuff. I think you can kind of guess that, you know, it's based on a great novel. Of course, the first few episodes are going to be really interesting story-wise. And I'll say the story very simply. It is a road trip where a guy who just got out of jail found out that not only did his wife cheat on him, but she got in a car accident with her mouth around the dude's. And they died instantly. And this is how the show starts. And
that's hilarious.
Yeah, it was his best friend. And that's how the show starts. And there's also, I'll just hint, there is some supernatural stuff going on here. If you ever watched the CW show Supernatural, which I'm not going to hate on, but I'm going to say what Supernatural wishes it was is this show. Highly recommend seeing it. I think that it's absolutely deserving of your time, especially if you're a fan of, it's a bit gory. It's definitely an intense show.
I'm gonna watch
this. Some graphic stuff in there, but it's part of it. All fits the narrative and what it's trying to say, so it's none of it is unintentional or disrespectful of the source material, because the source material, oh my, like there are so many moments when you're reading that book where you're like, I gotta stop. Yeah. Like I can't keep going. This is insane. So highly recommend. It's a great cultural moment. I think that this book has finally been successfully brought. I was really worried. This is a tough thing to bring to light, and I think they nailed it. The direction is amazing. Ricky Whittle is perfect as Shadow Moon, the main character. Ian McShane from Deadwood is in this, and it's the cast could not be any better. Even Emily Browning, who I think some people are a little like iffy on, you know, she's a Series of Peculiar Events woman, very young, but she found her role. I think she found her post Sucker Punch redemption. That said, American Gods, I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
Fantastic.
John, you have been surprisingly nice in this review.
I know. Like, well, that's how you know.
Two things? You gave an A and a 4.5?
I know.
This is a big day for cinema history.
For Cinemaholics history, this is probably the nicest I've been since ever. Probably John Wick Chapter 2, I think, maybe.
I still got to see that.
I hope you do. I really
do. Sober, man.
All right. I think that'll do it for our episode this week. Thanks for hanging out with us and on YouTube and iTunes and everything like that. Don't forget, if you like our show, you want it to keep going and support us, we want to make it better. We want to keep coming out with new episodes. Hit us up. Let us know what you love, hate. Go to iTunes. Leave us a review. Google, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold, we're there. And if you have any issues, you can always email us, cinemaholicspodcast@gmail.com.
And remember to always include your favorite Pop-Tart flavor.
Yeah, that's right. Your Pop-Tart preferences are very important to us. But yeah, we're not going to be like United Airlines. We're not going to drag you out of the internet. We just want to... Okay.
Jonathan!
I didn't think that one through. Next week, Will Ashton will be back. So on his behalf, I'm sure he is itching to talk about some of this stuff as well. I think that he's really looking forward to seeing Lost in Z. And we talked about Free Fire last week, so you can check out that episode if you want to hear about that movie. Will talked about it for a few minutes, like 5 minutes, I think. He went on. I think that he did give it its due.
He did.
I think he covered it.
He did his job.
Yeah. He did his job. Don't forget to check out your cinema homework so you can become a cinemaholic, unlike Maverick.
Yeah, you don't want to be cinesober like me.
And with that, we'll finish things out here. From the internet, California, I am Johnny Green.
And from the dial-up dungeon, I am Maverick Hines.
See you next time.
Bye.